It's Phil Parr with his... never starts your stopwatch on time. I try to never do that, just to confuse people. Setting in this evening for Wynn Elliott, who couldn't be here today on the Blind Like Me show. And it's hot in Texas, I tell you that. It goes to about 90 at noon and stays that way till after 9 at night. So I could complain about that, but it wouldn't help any at all. Peter Mikocek, we found out you were pronouncing your name wrong, and I'm sorry about that. How are you, sir? Good to have you with us.
Very good. How are you?
I'm well. And you're in you're on Long Island where you live?
Yes.
I think out at the tip of Long Island, way kind of out away from as far as you can get from New York City, don't you? Isn't that about right?
100 miles east on a little island in the Peconic Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
And
although it's pouring rain now with a big thunderstorm.
Oh, yeah?
So
I would take that over what I've got. But, you know, so your name was mentioned. I said the other day, Don had sent me your phone number, and when I found out about this play that you're doing, and your name was mentioned, and Don Patterson said, oh, yeah, Pete, that's the guy that's always doing these big projects by himself.
Well, I'm not doing this one by myself.
That's how he remembered you. I mean, that was his recollection of you always tying into these great handyman projects. And we've had you on Handyman several times all by yourself, just doing.
Oh, it's always fun talking to you guys over there.
Yeah, oh, it is. Let's before we're going to talk about a play that you have that you were the writer, author of the play, and also your money is involved in putting it all together. And I want to get to that in just a minute, but let's do a little bit about your early life, if you don't mind. What is your level of vision, first off?
I'm pretty much a total. But like 99.9.
Which means you can see light, which means you can
sometimes,
see...
Yeah, sometimes. You know, but if I'm sitting in the room and you turn the light off, I might be... I'd have to go feel the light bulb to see if it's really off.
You're blind. You're just blind. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
You're just blind. How long has it been this way? How long have you been blind?
Oh, well, I have RP, so it's... I always knew, you know, when I was a little kid, I kind of had a feeling, and in high school I could drive, but I knew I really shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I drove a little bit, and then I said, you know what, this is not cool, man. I could, but by now I'm in my early 50s, and I guess I've been a total for a while now.
So it's been, but it's been a gradual thing over the...
Yeah, you get used to it along the way.
And you had the benefit of sight, so you know about colors and you know what a lot of things look like that a lot of us people have never seen anything. We'd have got no concept.
Yeah.
So you had all that, and like you said, you were able to drive when you're a teenager, which teenagers, that's pretty important.
Yeah, it's pretty important, but I really was like a bicycle guy. It was harder for me to give up my bicycle than give up driving.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And so you just went to a normal public school, like all
regular school.
The guys around you?
All the way through college,
right? Oh, did you do college?
Yeah, but by the time I started college, I couldn't really see what was on the page. You know, then I couldn't read anymore.
His eyes were fading.
Yes, and I was kind of off on my own and trying to figure out what to do. And like my second semester of college, I really screwed up because I couldn't see to take the test, and I didn't know who to talk to or who to ask about it and what to do. So until I, you know, like realized I got to get a reader, I got to try to like figure out how to do this, then I went back to school again and started over. You know, I lost like a year or something.
So you were
around trying to get grips on it. Yeah,
you were kind of in denial about this blindness stuff, right?
No, I wasn't in denial. I just didn't know what to do. I didn't really have any. No, I knew it. I didn't, and it was pretty apparent. And it was just, you know, it's like I didn't really have anybody to turn to. Although my older brother was blind in college, and he did pretty well.
Uh-huh.
So it just took me a while to learn the things that I had to do to get mobility training, to get to learn how to use a reader, to learn.
Yeah.
Back then, everything was on tapes.
Sure, it was.
And actually, that's when the very first Kurzweil reading machine came out, which was a huge machine.
Yeah.
And but nobody could use it. It didn't really work that well. But after I got that stuff down, then it was better and easier. And actually, when I finally started using a cane, it kind of was easier. It was harder being like a high partial than, you know, and going around. And
yeah.
As soon as I had the white cane in my hand, then it was like, you know, so I have my freak flag here. It's like, hey,
I've heard,
you know,
other guys say that had limited sight, that they were depending on their eyes too much, and it really made life difficult because
you couldn't really, it didn't work. Yeah,
yeah, your old eyes weren't that good. You were running into stuff. And,
it was dangerous.
We can laugh about that.
It's like,
We can laugh about that, but nobody else better. Anyway, so you did college. Did you get a degree in something? You know, what kind of degree did you get?
I got a degree in psychology, but then I got interested in computers.
Uh-huh.
So then I came to New York City and went to a school in New York City and got another degree in computers.
By this time, you were blind, pretty much.
Yeah.
And were you able to work in either psychology or computing as a make a living doing either one of those?
Yeah. For a while, I worked at the World Trade Center as a system designer for a while, for like 11 years.
At the World Trade Center?
Yeah.
What a thing. So that attack in 2001 was personal to you, wasn't it?
Oh, man. I had quit by then.
Yeah.
I quit the Trade Center job just a few years before that, but I still had lots of friends that worked there.
Imagine.
And when I used to work there, actually, my father was a New York City fireman, right?
Yeah.
So I was always like, I don't know, I always had like a fireman spirit or something. So when I used to work at the Trade Center, I worked on the 71st floor.
Yep.
And I used to, every once in a while, practice taking the stairs down.
Ah.
It's like, you know what? I want to know the way down the stairs. So I used to go, like once every couple of months or something, I'd go down the stairs.
Just in case.
Just in case, yeah, because it's like, you know something? You never know, man. And actually, the first bombing, I wasn't at work either. I had played hooky. I called in sick. I wasn't sick. I just had bought a house, and I wanted to go out to my house and, like, mess around with my house. So I just called in sick, and that day was the day of the first bombing of the Trade Center.
In 92, I think it was 92.
Yeah.
So you were a New York City kid, and you were raised in the big metroplex.
I was from a small town. East end of Long Island is like a small rural area.
Huh.
It's recently become like the Hamptons and very rich.
Yeah.
But back then it was, you know, it was kind of rural. There were a lot of farms around, and people where I grew up were like fishermen and baymen and stuff like that.
Yeah, making their living as fishing.
Yeah, but that's all gone now. Now it's tourism.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I was just up not far from there, and we're in Massachusetts, where they come together pretty much here and sang at a guy's wedding. You wouldn't think so, but it gets hot up there, buddy boy. It was horribly humid and hot.
It's very humid. Ooh. Yeah.
This was in the middle of June.
The same. Yeah, it's like in the 90s here.
Yeah.
During the day, but it's humid too.
Yeah, it was terribly humid. Anyway, so you got a degree in psychology, but you never did use that. You did computers instead.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah.
Was that psychology? Was that to try to figure out what your problem? A lot of guys that do that try to figure out what's wrong with them, what their problems are. You know.
Now you know what happened.
What?
Like when I first started college, I took the book and I sat under a tree and I counted the number of classes for each major.
Uh-huh.
Psychology had the least amount of classes.
Is that right?
I said, I'll be psychology.
I love that approach. I would do that. That would be something I would think about. So, computers, why did you quit your looks like you had a pretty good gig there going in the World Trade Center. Why did you leave that? You just got tired of it or what?
Yeah, I don't know. It was like a very secure job with a pension, all that stuff. If I would have stayed there, I would have already been retired with a pension.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? But I was just always like, it's not for me really. And I never really wanted to, I don't have kids or anything. And I was like, you know, this is a job for a man who needs a secure job and has taken care of a family. I was just always like a roustabout. So you know what? And then, so I just started working for myself. I was building computers and doing web stuff. And so I just worked for myself then after that.
And probably did all right.
Probably. Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was all right. It was the good thing about computers. I always had was able to get some kind of work or do something. Or I like doing computer repairs, and me and this other blind computer guy started for a while, and we built computers and sold them, and we did pretty good for a while. And until Dell started up, and once Dell started up, the price of computers went down so fast that we couldn't really make a living at it. We couldn't make that much of a profit anymore because they call it commoditized, where the price is just like something like computers, which were very expensive. All of a sudden, they're mass produced, and the price goes way down on them. So a little screwdriver shop like us, we couldn't compete with Dell. So it's like,
yeah, that's weird. Well, we got somewhere in this house, somewhere in our storage closet, somewhere, there's a $2,500 behemoth.
I have one in my garage.
That you couldn't, wouldn't even make a good boat anchor nowadays, but it was $2,500, and it had a gig of RAM, and we thought, this was a 486, and it was the greatest computer in the world.
Yep. I remember way back. I set up the first PCs at Baruch College in Manhattan, very first PCs and that had speech on them. I was there. I set them up and put them together, and it was pretty exciting back then. It was pretty cool.
And they did this so that they could have blind students at their college, or what did they?
Yeah, and they worked pretty good.
That's pretty forward looking.
Computers made a big difference to me. Computers really. Now email, and I was on the web before they had the World Wide Web. The internet used to have a thing called, they still have FTP. People still use FTP.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's just that, and it was a thing called Gopher. Gopher was like the web before you had the web. It was kind of, but it was only text.
Yeah,
and. All stuff is great, though, man. I mean, computers really. I can't write without a computer.
Computers have not leveled the playing field for sighted and blind people, but they brought us a long way, buddy.
Oh yeah, I would never give up a computer.
They're such a integral part of my life now. First thing I do every morning, go and check my email.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty nice, and and there's a lot of stuff you can do, and people just have to remember it's a tool. It's not people are so like, oh, I hate computers, blah, blah, blah. But it's just like saying I hate a hammer. It doesn't really, it's a tool. You use it for whatever you want to use it for, and it's just a machine, but it's very useful. It's a pain in the neck, because it's always broken.
Yeah, and they don't always, the problem with me and computers is they don't always do things the same way. They don't do it tomorrow the same way they did it yesterday.
They used to.
Yeah.
They used to. Back when I first started using computers, like in the DOS days, computer didn't really make a mistake. But now the software is so, the software is made to make it easy for people to use, and to do that, you have to sacrifice a lot of the, it's hard to explain, but the easier it is for people to use, the worse and more complicated the software has to be to error check and stuff like that. So now it gets all, and Windows is like a behemoth. Still. I do all my writing on computer. I do all my music, not the recording, but I do all the music mixing and stuff like that on computers. I even taught myself now to edit videos on computers. It's not really that bad. If you can edit music, you can kind of, if you have some kind of sound in the background of the video, you can edit it.
You could. It'd be just like editing audio if you had to. Okay.
Just match it up and just hope it looks right.
How did your, as I said at the beginning of the program, we're going to talk about you as a playwright. How did you get it? Have you always been interested in the theater or in writing?
Yeah, I was writing stories and short stories. And then in New York, I got involved with some, a friend of mine was in the theater, and I knew some other people in the theater. And it was always like fun to write. I did a few one acts for my friend's theater group, and it's always been like a little hobby. Writing is, and when you're a musician too, if you write songs and stuff, you're really a writer.
And you are a musician also.
Well, I'm just a guitar. You know, I just like play chords on the guitar. I can't read music or anything. But
yeah.
But I used to play in a bluegrass band when I was in college. So when you play bluegrass, as strange as it is, you really get good timing from playing bluegrass, and that helps with all kinds of music.
Well, and if you play bluegrass, you understand, because you got to be right there. You can't be a beat chord behind. You got to be there. So you understand. I always say I understand a lot more than I can play. Music. I'm not a very good player. I'm just a chord maker. Also, I make lots of them, but I can understand. I understand timing and iambic pentameter and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right. So
it helps with rock and roll too, because I really like. You know, I'm a like classic rock and roll Long Island guy too, which I really love also.
Yeah.
And that makes it, you know, it makes it easier to play that kind of music too, because you really can get like nice rhythms and stuff.
But
I love playing.
So, but you also write some songs. You've written songs also.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you interested in not only writing but acting also?
No, acting's not my thing. No.
Acting is not your thing.
No.
You're a writer.
I'm a writer.
Yeah.
Writing is good, and I don't mind playing on stage. I don't mind singing on stage, but acting's not. And if I have to say like a line or two, that's cool. But it just doesn't. Acting's not. It's not really my thing.
Well, and I think you said the other day that you had written and had produced some other plays before you got into this one. Some other people had produced plays of yours.
Other people have produced plays of mine. This one I'm producing on my own.
Yeah.
Which is another thing to learn. I mean, it's like it's like the logistics of doing a play.
Sure.
You know, and which is kind of fun in a way too. I mean, the art stuff is a lot more fun, but this is also, you know, if you want to do the art, sometimes you have to do the work too. And I was really lucky to get a really good director.
Yeah.
That was really, and this is, she's a vision impaired woman too, which is just pretty high partial. She can see people's gestures and stuff from across the room.
You'd almost have to be to do. But let me ask you this.
Because you get to see what people are doing. And she does, like, you know, she has to teach in dance steps and stuff like that. So, you know.
Do you start out writing things as a play, or do you start out writing a book that becomes a play?
Oh, both. I think you just, like, have an idea for a story. And I like this. Either one. I mean, both. Depends. Both.
Yeah.
I mean, I've converted this from a short story to a play, and I've converted plays to short stories, and it works either way. I mean, to me, I just start to write something, I have a project in mind, which kind of helps sometimes.
Uh-huh. That's the big rub, is getting ideas.
Getting ideas.
You know, coming up with ideas. That's my problem, is coming up with ideas. I write songs, and so coming up with ideas is I can write a song. If I got an idea, it's no problem writing the song. It's coming up with the idea for me. Anyway, you did this start before you lost your eyes, or after, or has it always been a kind of a thing of yours, writing?
Writing? Pretty much always. I mean, even when I was like a kid, I used to write stories and just throw them away. Yeah.
Little things like that when you were a child. All right, but this is your. This is. Go ahead.
Oh no, that was just my phone. But I'm not.
Oh, was that your phone? This is your first. The first time, I think you said the first time your money has been on the line for a project of yours.
Yeah. Oh boy, that really makes you watch what you're doing and pay attention and.
Uh-huh.
And you know.
So you.
But
you,
that's all right.
You wrote this play. You hired the director. She hired, or you and she hired actors, or got actors to do, I guess you don't pay them for rehearsal, or do you?
The director, she's working for free.
Okay.
The actors are working for free.
Uh-huh.
Because it's New York City theater, I mean, it's good, you get reviewed and people come to see it, and so it's people, actors and directors, they're very, like, resume-driven. They, you know, they need to, that's kind of... their payment. I mean, if I come out ahead, I would certainly be glad to share the money with them.
But, yeah.
You know, the chances of coming out ahead in theater, you do it more for the experience and to, you know, I'm sure there's ways to make money in theater too, but theater in New York City is a little expensive because you can't rehearse in your backyard. You don't have a backyard. You have to rent a rehearsal space.
Yeah.
The theaters are really expensive, and there's a lot of insurance, and things have to be checked and fireproofed, and it's hard to get it. You know, New York City is great for a blind person. I mean, I don't think I could do this anyplace else, because just the amount of like running around I have to do, like all of a sudden somebody accidentally, one of the actors left a couple of the set pieces on the street, so I had to go get another like pair of bar stools the next day. And in New York City, you can get a cab right away. You don't have to call a cab. You just go out on the street.
It's there.
Put your hand up and, I mean, you have to stand on the side of a busy street with buses going by. And sometimes they're not there, but you usually can get around. Or there's a subway you can get to, and you can really get around to places. And, you know.
Well, what do you mean he left them on the street? These bar stools.
I guess we were moving a lot of stuff, and they just left them on the street. We were getting into a cab, and we were putting in guitars, and we had all this other stuff, and I guess somehow they didn't get put in the cab. And
there was no point in going back and looking for them, because they were in somebody's...
Actually, I was I went back to look for them, helpless and stupid as that was. And
but they're in somebody's house.
They probably
house.
Didn't last 5 minutes.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sure they didn't. They're in somebody's... Yeah, somebody's sitting on them having a Budweiser.
With my two best bungee cords, too. I almost missed the bungee cords more than my...
More than the bar shoes. Okay, so you went and got these bar shoes. But your money is on the line for the rehearsal space and the theater space to do the play.
Not the theater. The theater is part of is what the festival is about. The festival pays for the theater, gives you the theater space to use.
Okay.
We share it with tons of other shows, but... so it's not just, I wish it was just mine. We only had one chance to rehearse for like 2 hours once. Like a week before we did our show, and that really was more so the lighting people could figure out the lights and stuff like that and program the lights. Usually you play, they get a week in the theater to rehearse in the theater and get to know the space and get to keep their equipment there and get to do sound checks and stuff like that. We're like, that's too bad, that's all you get, you're out of here, because there's 10 other shows using the same space. But the price of New York City theater space, I mean, for a week, you're lucky. I mean, the cheapest I've seen theater for a week is like $4,000, maybe.
For a week?
Yeah.
And that would give you a week to rehearse. So you got how many hours? 4 hours?
No, nothing. We got nothing, man. I mean, altogether, we're using the theater for 4 hours, 5 hours.
But rehearsal time, how much did they give you?
None. They give us nothing. No. We just came for doing a tech. What they call tech is where we run the show and the lighting people do the lighting stuff, sound people do the sound stuff. Although we were just a live band on stage, so and the actors are making the sound effects, so we don't have any real sound stuff. But it was more for the lighting person to program the lights for the show. So
and the lighting person is not your person. He's the part of the festival.
No, that was we had to get a lighting person.
You have your own lighting person.
Yeah, and luckily the lighting person was willing to do it also.
Free.
Although usually that's very expensive. Lighting producers and stage managers, that's all like union work, and that costs money too.
Yeah. But how do these guys know, these actors and actresses, they memorize their lines, but they've never done this play. They had never done it in until Friday night when it opened.
No. We rehearsed. We rehearsed for 3 weeks.
Oh, you did rehearse for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I rented a room in a building that the whole building is just like rehearsal space, studios.
Okay.
Studio. Yeah.
And so you rented a room, and they got to, but you're talking about not getting
rehearsal. We weren't in the theater. We didn't go. Yeah, not to practice in the theater. You know, it's very different doing it in a room than going into the theater.
Sure. Be completely different.
Yes, it could be different sizes, things you don't expect. There's blah, blah, blah. So usually theater groups have rent some time in the theater before the play opens so they can practice on the actual stage. But we didn't have that luxury. You know, we just go. That's what touring groups do too, though.
Sure.
You know, a touring group will have a show set up in such a way that it can go any place, and you know, look at the area and figure out, you know, we could spread out or squish in and fit the space and do the show. You know, they're used to going a place, but
yeah.
No, but that's a big company of people and professional theater people and stuff
that do this all the time.
Yeah.
Now, this director that you got to do this for free, she found the actors for you. She said, I knew a guy that would be good for this part. Called him on the phone.
Yeah, we both did. I got some from Craigslist. I advertised for some. I did a bunch of auditions, and then she knew some people because she has, you know, she's been in theater for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So she knew a lot of people. And the actors we got were great because it's New York City, and you get... everybody that wants to be in the theater comes to New York City.
And there's a lot of those, a lot of people that want to be in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, people out of college get their degree in theater and stuff, and they come to New York to see. But we got a pretty wide range. I mean, I guess the youngest person in the cast is 28, and the oldest is 42.
And then there's you.
And there's me, me and my friend George.
Who's the really old guy.
It was like two old guys, but we're up in the back playing. He's playing piano, I'm playing bass and guitar.
Yeah.
And we do a couple of songs, but it's really about the actors and stuff.
So, you, of course, these actors and actresses who come to New York wanting to do theater, they can't sit at home waiting on the phone to ring. They got to show somebody their stuff, or they'll never get hired by anybody.
Right. That's why they're willing to put in all this time and effort to do shows like this, because this is where they get, you know, people come to see them.
Hoping that somebody will come to see them that'll say, hey, you're great. I want you in my, you know, I'll pay you to do, you know, hoping that happens.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Like musicians, I guess, and maybe do this in Nashville. Okay.
Songwriters too, same thing. You know, you got to play, play in front of people. Well, I guess with the internet now, you can put stuff up, you know, on the web. But there's a million things up on the web. It's hard to pick one new song.
It'd be very chancy that somebody would come along that would, you know, want your song, because it's like you said, there's millions of things up on the web.
Yeah, there's millions of them. Well, same thing in bars too. Yeah. I mean, musicians it's tough too.
Yeah. All right. You live, I guess you must have a sighted wife or partner that helps you, that drives you. How do you get?
Yeah. She doesn't like to drive around. She doesn't drive into the city or anything like that.
Yeah.
She'll drive around this little town, but that's.
Yeah. I don't blame her for not driving the city. So this started, how long ago did you decide to do this? A year? 2 years? Yeah. How long ago, when did you finally say, I'm going to commit my bucks and my time, and I'm going to put on this play in New York?
February. February.
Of this year.
Yeah, I submitted. I already had the script written from a couple of years. I did it a couple of years ago at a thing called the Blind In Theater Festival in Zagreb, Croatia. There's a big theater group in Zagreb who are very good actors, and in Croatia, they were never accepted into the actor. Like in New York, blind actors can get into Actors Equity, they can get into SEG. But in Croatia, they didn't allow blind actors to join the union. So these people said, yeah. And they bought their own theater, and they and their acting troupe goes out of this theater, and then they decided to start doing a theater festival for blind theater people. So every 2 years they have the festival in Zagreb, Croatia.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I did the play 2 years ago.
And you went over there and did this play 2 years ago?
Yeah, I got sponsored by a theater group that paid my plane fare.
And you did the same thing, played some music in it,
kind of the same. I mean, this show now is much more refined, and we have the actors are doing the singing. It's more of a more like a musical. There, it was just kind of a like a cabaret-ish piece, but we did it on stage. But it's much simpler.
At that time, it was much simpler.
At that time. So then I had the script, and it's just sitting in the drawer. So I'd known about the New York Fringe, and so I just sent the script in.
Now, you know, I feel like I'm asking the wrong questions. I don't know what to ask. What is the New York Fringe? You use these things, and we don't, you know.
Oh, the festival. It's called the New York City International Fringe Festival. That's the name of the festival that I'm in right now. And actually, the many cities around the world have fringe festivals. They have it in Chicago. They have it in Orlando.
Okay.
The biggest one is in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. All the big cities have fringe festivals, but the New York City one, that's pretty big, too. I mean, that's...
I would think so. New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's big in New York City.
Yeah.
So this is what's called a fringe festival.
Yeah, that's just what they call the festival, the fringe festival.
Yeah.
Because it's all new people, new shows, new ideas. It gives people a chance to demonstrate their shows and stuff like that.
On the edge or on the fringe.
On the edge.
On the fringe.
Right.
All right. All right. So you did this play in Croatia. You came back here and you decided to, back in the winter, I think I'll do this in New York, and I'm going to do it myself. Put up my bucks, find me a director, and do it
right.
Myself. So
right.
you call, first of all, a director, the girl that's directing for you.
Well, first I had to wait and get accepted by the Fringe. I didn't get accepted until May. So I had pretty much forgotten about the whole thing. I figured, well, I hadn't heard from them, so I thought I was out. Because they said they'd start mailing stuff in April.
Uh-huh.
So by the time May rolled around, I was off thinking about doing something else. I was going to, like, rip down my garage and put up this, rebuild a music studio that I wanted to do. And I did a music video, and I was thinking about, I had the script written for a second music video.
Uh-huh.
And then I got the thing from the Fringe, and it's like, ugh. I got to get busy, man.
The Fringe had, of course, I guess you apply and everybody doesn't get accepted.
There's thousands of people apply. I was shocked that I get in. It's like, wow, I got in the Fringe.
Are they judging you on your script or on your previous experience or what?
Well, actually, previous experience probably kind of works against you a little bit because this is more for people. I mean, there are people that have been in the Fringe a few times, but it's really for, first-time people or people with different ideas or want to try to demonstrate, weird things and stuff. And but there's a lot of applications. I didn't really think I had a chance to get in the Fringe.
There are thousands, and sure enough, looked over your script. Now, they had no idea, and still don't have any idea, or didn't until you got there to do it, that you had a vision problem.
No, it wasn't part of my application or anything. I mean, it was a story about two blind guys, but I didn't say I'm a blind guy in it. There was no box to check on the application. Blind guy, so I was just like, well, it doesn't matter anyway, because I'm just the writer, I'm the writer.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't make any difference, would it? Well, I just always ask that, because I interviewed this one guy that came down to Texas and didn't tell the guy that he was interviewing for. He was blind till he got here, and he got the job. Anyway, so you got accepted by the Fringe in May, and you go, oh, man, this is coming up in August. I gotta get going.
I got to get going, man.
Yeah.
So then I just kept moving forward. Just kept doing things, and I figured, I'll just keep going and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pieces kind of fell together.
And here we are.
And here we are. Yeah.
And here we are. Now, do people pay to go see plays at this festival?
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's $15, which is pretty reasonable for New York. I mean,
it is.
A movie in New York now is like 14. So... But my play's only like 50 minutes.
Yeah, I was trying to think. We came to New York and we went and saw a play called On the Town.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember what we paid, but it was, it was
a lot of money.
I don't know, 75, 80, 90, maybe 100 bucks.
Yeah, you could pay 150, 175 for a ticket for a play.
I thought it was outrageous, but Luann said, well,
that's
what it is. You pay that or you won't go,
Yeah.
And while I loved it, I don't know if it's worth $100. Anyway, your play's only 50 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So $15 is probably a good thing.
About right.
All right, now let's get to your storyline. Give us a synopsis of your story.
That's about two blind guys. They're like goofy friends, and one of them falls in love with a voice he hears on the internet. And the other friend realizes that she's in Croatia, and then he's they finally find their way to the seashore. All this is like setups for the next song. You know, there's like this, it's a musical, so there's always songs in between things. So they end up by the harbor, and there just happens to be a cruise ship going to Croatia. So he comes up with the idea, why don't we pretend we're musicians? We can get on this cruise ship, find the girl. And then there's a Texas billionaire oil man who's also looking for the same girl on the boat. So him and this guy have a scuffle, and they end up, I don't want to give away the story, but they end up, there's a doctor on the boat too who's trying to help the guy who's fallen in love. And it ends up that the it's a little bit of a blind handyman story too, because one of the blind guys gets on the boat and realizes that there's something wrong with the motor on the boat, because their berth is right next to the engine room. And he tries to tell the captain, who's this woman captain who's really strict and, you know, keeping her thumb on everything, that there's something wrong with the motor, and she doesn't believe him. And the story goes on, and it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of music, and everything has a happy ending.
Well, that's good. But it is, I didn't realize it was a musical. So you wrote not only the play, but you wrote songs to go with it.
Right. Yeah, I think there's 11 songs in it. I wrote six, and I co-wrote a couple, and then there was a few I took from people I knew. I went through everybody's music that I knew that had original music, and just listened to every single original music of every single person I knew that would let me use one. And then I took some out of theirs that fit the play perfectly. And one woman wrote a song, one of the local ladies from out here wrote a song for me too. That's really nice, beautiful song.
Well, man, I should send you a CD of my original songs.
There you go, for the next one.
You might want to, I didn't realize that, I didn't realize all this. This just blows me away. It's not an impossible thing for you to do. I mean, you're doing it, but doing it without, of course, you're used to being without sight, and I don't know. It just seems like a hell of a challenge to me for a guy.
Yeah, it's fun. It is. It's like a lot of work. It's a lot more work than I thought. I mean, if I knew it was this much work, I would have said, "Oh man, this is."
You would have said no.
Work. Yeah.
Because there's no way for you to make any money, really, is there?
No, chance of making money is slim, very slim. And that's always, but that's true in music. I mean, you could play in a band and make money in a band. You know, you can be an actor and get jobs doing commercials, but that's tough too, man. I know many actors, and actors have it really. It's really hard to make money acting.
Well, it's hard to make money playing music because you end up spending it on guitar strings and new equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're always
there and,
always wanting to buy that new effect. Or something. Anyway,
Art is hard. Yeah.
There were 50 people, you say, Friday night who came to see your opening night.
Yeah. The theaters in the city are pretty little. Yeah.
Now that adds up to if at $15 a piece.
Well, I don't get all that. That's the festival handles the box office. They just give me a portion of that.
They just give you a portion of that.
Yeah, sure.
So that will be used to offset the room you rented to.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of money. They're renting all these theaters. They have a lot of staff. They have to get people to theater directors, and the people demand the box offices, and people that just organize this whole big festival. And it's like those big music festivals too. You go to one of those music festivals where you camp out at. There's these big tractor trailers all over the place. Somebody's got to pay for all that stuff.
I guess when if you've been rehearsing all day and it comes supper time, it's your turn to buy.
Yeah, you spend a lot of side money on stuff, and cabs. I mean, it's great having cabs in New York City that you can just go out and get a cab. But every time you take a cab somewhere, it's $10. If you take a cab somewhere, it's $10. You take it back home, it's another $10. And if you get stuck in traffic, then it's $15. And if you're running around the city going to like a few different places, it starts to add up too. But it's still cheaper than having a car in the city, really.
Yeah,
or you could take the subway.
I've been to recording sessions where, you know, we'd record all day and it'd get 6, 7 o'clock at night and it was time to buy some beer and hamburgers. You know, we had to eat and drink. You know, you can't, the guy paying, you can't expect the musicians to pay for it. You got to pay for it, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So you got to do that. Then you got to have a big staff party at the end. But everybody seemed happy with the way things went Friday night. Everybody was pleased.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely. Oh, yeah. We were pretty psyched. We were definitely. There was a lot of mistakes and stuff, but that was okay. It's going to be a lot of mistakes.
And, of course, you're listening very carefully. You've got the script practically memorized, I guess. Pretty much, since you wrote it.
Yeah, well, I have my own work to do on stage too, so I got to hope I don't make a mistake. I'm playing the music on stage and doing the singing, doing the backup singing, stuff like that. So I make mistakes too up there.
Yeah, how many musicians in your little group there?
Just me and the piano player.
Just you and the piano player.
Yeah.
So you're playing some guitar and some bass.
Yep. He's playing piano, and sometimes he switches over and plays, like, drums on the piano. You know, puts the drum kit on and plays...
Oh, it's electric. It's not a real piano.
Yeah, yeah.
Keyboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And he's working for nothing.
Yeah. He's a retired actor. He just retired a couple of days ago from, like, 40 years of being an actor.
Now, are these people that are acting in your play, are they members of the Actors Guild or SAG or whatever it is?
No, no.
They're not.
I couldn't afford union actors.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many actors in the city. Just because you're in the union, I mean, these people are very good actors. And the only reason they're not in the union is because you have to accumulate so many hours first.
Yeah.
And pay a lot of money to get into the union.
There is no audio being taken of this play, is there? Is anyone recording it?
Oh, I'm going to have a friend videotape it, yeah. He's got like a high-def camera. He's going to come in and videotape it.
Wonder what the audio will be like on that, because that may be...
Video camera audio is always bad.
It's always bad, and it's going to...
Yeah, it's never that great when you videotape a theater thing. And we only get 15 minutes to set up and break down.
Yeah.
So we get 15 minutes before the show, so there's no way... I mean, I'd love to set up a digital deck or something and put like condenser mics on each side of the stage or something like that.
Or two or three boom mics or something.
Or even those lavalier mics or something.
Oh,
in the sound
yeah.
system. But there's no way I could possibly set that up in 15 minutes. There's just no way I could set it up and take levels. I mean, I got so...
Well, you could if I was there, but I'm not.
If you want to come here and set it up,
I don't. I've got beer to drink and books to read and wives to take care of.
New York's a far way away, man.
I've been to New York, and in fact, we went and spent a week in New York about 3 years ago. So we're not going to get what you know. What I'm thinking that if we got an audio of it, we could run it sometime on. But the audio is probably not going to be that good, is it?
Well, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
It'll be okay. I mean, I'm sure you can hear it, but who knows? You know, you never know. That's the other thing. You get one shot to videotape it, and then if it doesn't come out, then it's like, oh, well.
Well, let's see what we get, and maybe later on when it's all over and done with some episode of Blind Like Me, we'll just run the play.
Show.
Yeah, if it's 50.
Yeah, because it is. I did write it with, like, sound effects and stuff, so you can follow it.
Yeah. So we'd be able to tell. All right. In this play is called what is the? I don't think we've ever given it a name.
Play is called Cruising to Croatia because it was written for when we went to Croatia the first time. So.
Yeah.
And it's about these two guys getting on a cruise ship, so it's Cruising to Croatia.
Cruising to Croatia.
Right. It's directed by Pamela Sabah.
Uh-huh.
Pamela Sabah is the director, and the musician who's playing the piano with me is George Asiotis, who's a blind actor who's been active for like 40 years in New York City, and we have a whole cast of sighted and vision-impaired actors. We have two vision-impaired actors and three sighted actors.
Yeah. All right, how long does this festival go on? How long will you?
3 weeks. 3 weeks.
So it'll run this weekend.
Yeah, it's over on like the 24th, I think.
Of this month?
Like that. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to run this weekend on ACB Radio this Saturday, which will be the 16th. So if a guy was in the area, in New York City, you actually would have time to go see it.
There's a show on Sunday, the next day, Sunday the 17th, uh-huh. And then there's a show on Saturday and Sunday the next weekend.
The following weekend. So if
you can go to cruisingtocroatia.com, and everything is there. And it's Croatia's Croatia, and cruising is ing, you know, regular,
yeah.
Cruising to
Cruising, cruising to
Croatia.com.
So you domained that, cruisingtocroatia.com.
Oh, yeah.
So you can go look at information about when it runs. But it will run like this. Will be on the 16th, so it will run the next day and then right. On the following weekend. So if anyone was there...
Anybody in New York wants to come down, and
if you happen to live in New York City or be in the area or vacationing up there, you could go see this play written, and I suppose you're considered the producer...
Right.
Produced by, let me see what time we got here. 45 minutes. Do you feel comfortable, would you feel comfortable telling me about this building that you told me about?
Oh, the Blind Building in New York?
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea it existed.
Well, it's a building and it's all blind people. It's been around, I guess, 25 years, maybe 30 years. They put it in a part of New York City that was kind of like a rundown part way back when. But right now, it's probably the hottest part of New York City. Like, it's the most expensive real estate in the city now.
Is that right?
It's in Chelsea in Manhattan. It's right across from the Chelsea Hotel where Arthur Miller lived for many years, and Bob Dylan lived in there.
Yeah.
That's right across the street from the Blind Building.
And
Guitar Center, there's an old-fashioned guitar store right down the block from it. There's a lot of restaurants and diners, and it's in a pretty nice place of the city, although it's pretty crowded down there. Pretty crowded. But it was built as Section 8 housing. I mean, it's for poor blind people.
So all the poor blind people who apply for Section 8 housing are housed in this one building?
Oh, they wish. The waiting list is years and years.
Is it? Is it? Years and years?
Yeah.
But there are, I think you said, about 200 plus apartments in this.
I'd say it's 12 stories, so I think there's about probably close to 200 apartments. But there's a lot of blind people in New York.
And everyone there has some sight problem.
Oh, yeah.
There may be some high partials there, partially sighted. Yep. People, but are there any blind people who might have a sighted wife that live there? So there are occasionally sighted people.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Is there a recreation room of any kind, a big meeting, public?
Yeah, they have all that, sure.
They have all that. Is there pianos in there?
Yeah, actually they do. They have a little house band. They have classes downstairs. They have a bowling alley downstairs.
Because out of your 200 apartments, we're talking 500, 600, 700 blind people, there would be some really fine musicians. You know there would be.
Yep.
Have to be. A great little
building. Actually, there's another building in New York City, similar, except it's devoted towards people in the arts. And there are some very nice there's apartments over there. If you're an actor, a singer, or a musician, and you're not making very much money, there's a building like this called Manhattan Plaza with some very, I know a couple of super talented blind musicians that live over there.
Yeah.
Plaza, yeah. I knew a girl who was an opera singer and a guy who was a really excellent piano player and... technician.
Well, so actually what you're telling me is that I won't have to hunt any more interviews for this show for a long time, because you are going to provide me with these kinds of people. I'd love to interview the blind opera singer. That'd be a kick. She's got to have some great stories to tell. Wouldn't you think?
Could be, sure.
Oh, I would think she would. That's what we look for, is
I think she moved over to the West Coast a while ago, but
well, maybe you can find her for me. We'll talk about that. We'll wait till you get through with the play, because you're stressed to the max. You got all you can handle without worrying about my my little old problems. But the blind building, that just blew me away.
The blind building, I mean, in theory it sounds nice, but it's really, you know, the people there don't really have very much money, and it's kind of a tough place to live. You live in Manhattan, where if you want to go next door and have a hamburger in the diner, it's like $10 for a hamburger, and just the hamburger, you know, it's real expensive. I mean, it's nice to go out and get cabs and stuff, but you have no money, you know.
Yeah.
You can't take a cab. You have to take the subway, and the subway's hard. I mean, the subway's dangerous for blind people in the city. I mean, I take it. But I know a friend of mine, his sister was a blind woman. She got killed in the subway. You know, she fell down on the tracks. And
really?
I have a friend who thought between the cars was the door, and you know, stepped in between the cars, and he got pretty hurt. And you know, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, there's a lot of advantages for blind people in New York City, because you really have mass transit that actually works, and you can actually go a lot of places. But you know, your mobility has to be pretty good, and you have to be in, like, nerves of steel crossing some of these streets and stuff. But you can do it. You can do it.
Well, and you've also got a little grocer there. I mean, there's a grocery store on every block, seems like.
And New York City. You don't even have. You can just call them, and they'll bring it over. You can have anything you can think of delivered.
If you can pay for it.
If you can pay for it.
But most of the people in this blind building wouldn't be able to pay for too much. They'd have to go get it. Get it themselves and cook it. You know.
Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I just wonder, because blind people like to disagree and fight so much. I've never understood that. You know, they're both National American Council
NFB,
of Blind, NFB and AFB have their conventions on the same week, so you can't go to both. That's just dumb, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care.
Yeah, I think we have more alike than we have.
We do. We have much more alike than we do differences. Yeah. And I don't know why we can't. I don't know why they can't get along any better. But is this a pretty harmonious place? I mean, what are the chances of you getting hurt there? No, it's pretty bad.
I don't know. People aren't fighting in the elevators, but I guess it's all right. People get along.
Yeah. Well, you're staying there while you're in the city.
Obviously, my friend lives there, and he's letting me.
So how bad could it be?
You know, on his couch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's very good. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since you've got all your money tied up in rehearsal halls. And
yeah, if I had to rent a hotel for three weeks, a month.
And hamburgers for the troops at night, you got to do that. Things of that nature. Well, I admire your spunk and your tenacity and doing a thing like that. Especially, I might have tried this when I was 40, but not to. Of course, you're not as old as I am, and probably didn't live life quite as hard as I did.
If I had the chance to do it at 40, I would have. But the chance is now, so I'm.
So you're doing it now. What's the website again? It's.
CruisingToCroatia.com.
CruisingToCroatia.com. That will tell you a little bit about the play, and I guess some things about you and when the schedule is. And we know that when this runs this weekend, that there is a performance tomorrow, which will be the 17th, and then the following weekend, and that will be it. And it'll be back
for this time around. Until you sponsor me to come down to...
to Houston,
Texas to Houston,
and do it, and then we'll record it for real.
Yeah, that would be very cool. Man.
Peter Mikocek, sir, I thank you much, and I admire you. Wish you lots of luck, and I'm going to go to your website and look at that, and maybe we'll get an audio recording of your play. And keep on keeping on doing handyman stuff. You tear out that garage, and we're going to want to talk to you about that on the.
I've had some good handyman stories, but that's for the other show.
That's for the other show. The guy who does those big projects by himself. Tell him hello, and we thank you, sir. And I'm going to run this week.
Bye.
Thank you, Pete. I'll talk with you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. cruising to Croatia. I could not think of the word cruising for some reason during the Handyman Show. Cruisingtocroatia.com. Go look at it, and if you're in the area, go see it. What a thing. I'm blind producer. What a deal. I wish I could figure out a way to go see it. But with the trips, all the trips we've taken lately, there is no vacation budget left. Anyway, speaking of things you could do, we want to invite everybody to our gathering in Houston in October. We've done two of these before, and this will be, of course, if we've done two before and we're doing this would be the third one. Brilliant, isn't it? Anyway, we'd like for all of you to consider coming down to Houston, Texas in October. Weather's usually nice in Houston that time of year, and we hope that it will be this year. We've had good weather for the last couple that we've done. Hopefully we will this time. We arrive on Friday, October 24th. That night, we're going to have a little party, a little what we call a Blind Rifleman's Association party, and set up our equipment. We have to build from scratch a recording studio there in the Sheraton Hotel. Saturday, we're going to do the introductions that morning, cooking in the dark that afternoon, and play a lot of music Saturday night, evening and night, and Sunday morning. Sunday morning, a little non-denominational service for those of you who'd like to attend. Sunday at 11 a.m., we'll record the 250th Blind Handyman Show. And then that afternoon, we'll come up with a guest and do a blind like me, and a little show and tell, play a little music, go home on Monday morning. Nothing, no big long speeches, I promise you that. Come and join us in Houston. If you need more information, want more information, email me, Phil Parr, all one word, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, at Consolidated, C-O-N-S-O-L-I-D-A-T-E-D.net, or you can call me, but emailing is much better. I will give you phone number, 936-634-9500 is my number. But email me and let me send you this thing I've written about the gathering, and come and join us in Houston. It's all in fun. I guarantee if you come down to learn anything or be lectured or any of that kind of thing, well, don't bother, because we don't do that. We're just going to fellowship and have fun and enjoy the company and enjoy camaraderie with each other. Come and see us. Phil Park, Consolidated.net. Hope to see you in Houston. Hope to see you next week for another Blind Like Me. Thanks much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.